Welcome to the Work, Wealth, and Travel Podcast. I'm your host, Nicole, and this podcast is your guide to start creating a lifestyle by design. From entrepreneurship, money and finance, taxes and residencies, and everything in between, this show highlights the nuances of a true global citizen lifestyle. Let's dive in. Tony, welcome to the Work, Wealth, and Travel Podcast. I'm so excited to have you on today and dive into all things my favorite topic, which is finance, and yours as well. But before we get into it, tell me a little bit more about yourself, your story, your journey, where you started, and how you got to where you are today.
All right. Well, so I started out like quite a few years ago as an insurance salesperson. And what I quickly discovered was that people didn't really understand what they were buying. So I became a fee-based insurance consultant, and I ended up working for predominantly for other financial planners, for trust officers, attorneys, and even doing some work with the California Department of Insurance. And what I quickly realized is that all across the spectrum, nobody really understood their insurance products, including people in the industry. So I started getting into education and financial literacy. I've been involved with the financial literacy movement for a long time before it was a thing. And, it just really became a passion helping people to understand. I wrote my first book to sort of simplify the life insurance process. It was the first book out there to actually talk about what life insurance is rather than like, hey, why life insurance is the best thing since sliced bread. That kind of got me passionate, And then I retired as a consultant to focus full-time on my mission of changing the way we think about money and helping people to kind of take a step back and think about who they are and what they want to do rather than thinking about the specific tactics of different financial services and products.
That's so interesting when you mentioned, and thank you for sharing all of that. It sounds like you've had a really interesting journey, but I love that you mention in your story about the insurance and how not a lot of people, they're buying insurance, but they're not fully comprehending what they're purchasing. We're kind of just sold the mission of you need it and it's going to help you, but you don't really know what the fine print is and what's happening. So do you find that when you work with clients, that is something that you see a lot is we have this iteration in our heads of I need to save or I need to invest money, but they don't really understand what's behind that and the why.
That's exactly it. It is a why is, so often, is a friend is selling insurance. My old college roommate is now an insurance salesperson and he says it's a good thing, or I golf with somebody and they say it's a good thing. And so we do all these things. And that's where I expanded from insurance. Is that it wasn't just insurance. I found that people are just buying stuff because they think they should be buying it. And also there's a lot of intimidation to say, I don't really understand this. Everybody thinks I should know this. So I'm going to act like I know it. And, I go ahead and do it. And that's what happens when people in their insurance policies and they, 5 years later, they go, okay, what did I buy? How does this help me? And so, I found that that was the way with pretty much every financial service and product.
Wow. That's so interesting because for me, I think what comes to mind for me is when you are buying an investment and you have a broker who is doing that on your behalf or whether it be mutual funds and you think, okay, I need to have this person because they know everything and they're going to get me the best returns. But then when you actually look at the math, a lot of the times it performs worse than if you just, dollar cost average, buy something every single month, especially if it's more of an index fund, maybe less so of a stock. We really rely on other people to know what they're talking about because we, a lot of the time, don't. But just because we don't doesn't mean that somebody else, even a professional in the industry, still, they don't know what that means.
Exactly. And I think one of the things that oftentimes is missing is that ability to understand what that professional actually knows. And you pointed out is sometimes professionals, they're very good and focused in one specific product and area. But as humans, we have a tendency to act like we know a lot about a lot of things and to think we actually know a lot about a lot of things. So we don't back up and go, okay, well, how does this really work? How is this going to be a good fit for me? And that's kind of the issues with professionals. And oftentimes people end up working with the wrong professional that's not a good match either for them personality-wise, temperament-wise. And so often, you know, the thing that really struck me is the psychological component isn't taken into account in the financial conversation, how we feel about money, how we feel about our goals. And so I felt that that was something that really needed to be talked about, is our mindset and how all that comes into play.
Okay, so talk to me about that. I want to hear more about that and your work within the psychological component when it comes to finance.
Well, I think, you know, one of the things that I saw, over the course of my career, I did some litigation consulting, as I mentioned, you know, I saw some abuse cases, you know, is that oftentimes it wasn't a bad intent on anybody's part. It was a lack of education and communication and not understanding people's goals. Is, you know, Bitcoin is a perfect example. You know, like 2 years ago, everybody's like, hey, you need to buy Bitcoin, but nobody talked about like, okay, well, you know, this, my goal is financial independence. Is Bitcoin the right tool to help me get to financial independence? So that's really part of it, is changing that perspective and talking about, okay, well, this is what I want to do. Is this the right tool? But oftentimes with a financial service or product, we go, okay, is this the right financial service or product? So think of it this way. If you go to your doctor and you walk into your doctor and the first thing you say is, hey, I need knee surgery. You know, doctor's going to look at you and say, well, you know, you've got a head injury. Knee surgery isn't going to really help you. But in the financial service world, you know, that's what happens. Somebody walks in and they say, hey, this is a product you need. Nothing to do with the problem that you're trying to solve. So that's a big issue, I think.
Okay, so now when you work with clients and throughout your many years in this industry, I'm curious, what are some of the common themes that you have seen when it comes to money, when it comes to personal finance, themes and potentially misconceptions as well?
Misconceptions. The biggest misconception is not even knowing what questions to ask. I think that's a big thing, is that people are not curious about the financial service and products that they buy. They oftentimes take it, you know, as truth, certain things about financial services and products where they don't really, you know, think it through logically. You know, people spend more time researching a new television or a car, you know, or their new electronic gadget than they do thinking about, you know, like this product that I'm going to pay $2,000 a year for, or that I'm counting on for financial independence. So I think that's it, is to kind of back up and, you know, think about what you're trying to do. And you don't just, I say the word think, because I think that's a big part of it. But I think also educating, is that oftentimes what would happen is I got called in usually to review existing insurance portfolios, is that I'd ask people, why did you buy this? And they're like, well, I'm not really sure. What do you think it's going to do? Well, I don't really know what I think it's going to do. How do you think it's performing? Well, I'm not sure. And, you know, that's a big part of it, is people are not even thinking about like, okay, what is my goal? You know, and I come back to that a lot, is like, what are my questions? What am I thinking about this? You know, I hate this insurance policy. It seems stupid that I'm paying these premiums. And people wouldn't know that. People know instinctively. You know, oftentimes, you know, we may underplay our gut hunches, but they'll know if something's a good product or a bad product, but they don't really know what to do with that feeling and how to put that into action.
Okay, so you mentioned something in there about financial education. So I want to talk about that a little more and your perspective on financial education and if that is something that is lacking in any area throughout the life cycle of the average American, from when you are young learning about finance or maybe not learning about finance up until you are retired. What do you think is lacking within that system? And then, you know, and I think you are part of the solution, which I love. But tell me a little bit more about where you think that's lacking and what can be mitigated so that Americans and really everyone can have a better financial education and be more knowledgeable about what they need to be doing and also what they shouldn't be doing.
That is a great question. And you mentioned Americans, and, you know, I've had the opportunity to interact with financial literacy advocates from around the world. And the trends are common. You know, people aren't saving enough. They're taking on too much debt. You know, it's, they don't understand their choices. So it's like, it's people. in general. It's not an American issue. And the big thing is that the latest movement has been to throw a lot of financial education stuff at people. And that doesn't help people either, because it's like, again, if you go to a doctor and you're going to get knee surgery, the doctor doesn't say, well, you have to watch this video on knee surgery, you know, before you can do it. You know, go out and get yourself educated on knee surgery. You know, the doctor's going to say, hey, you know, knee surgery is a problem that you have. You know, here's, you know, the pluses and minuses of having surgery or whatever, this treatment or that treatment. And here are the outcomes. And then if you have more questions, you can ask questions, but that's usually the thing that you need to know, is because a doctor says, okay, well, your knee hurts, here's the outcomes that you can expect. And we don't do that with financial services and products. We hit people over the head with just boatloads of information, which doesn't do them any good either. And it's that people don't really understand the problems that they're trying to solve, and they don't advocate. That's the other thing, is people don't advocate for themselves when they see a financial service professional or an estate planning attorney or an insurance agent. They're not strong. They don't walk in and say, hey, I know that this is my problem, and I need you to solve this problem, and redirect that financial services professional when they're not solving the problem. When they start saying, well, you know, this is a product you need to consider. And you're like, no, I came in here to solve this problem. But that's on you, is to understand the problem that you're trying to solve, and then make sure that you're getting the education to help you solve that problem instead of getting blinded by everything else that's out there.
I think that's such a great example. It really puts it into perspective, your knee example of no, that would make completely no sense. No doctor would ever be, hey, okay, you think you need knee surgery? Watch this video about knee surgery and then we'll do knee surgery.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make sense when you put it in perspective.
Yeah. And, you know, and the doctor doesn't try to talk you into a different product and say, oh, well, while you're getting knee surgery, you might as well get ankle surgery as well. You know, I got a 2-for-1 deal.
Oh my gosh. I can only imagine. Yeah. No, but it's a great analogy, because it's so true. That's exactly what happens in the finance world. So talk to me about your book and how your book is helping to solve this problem.
Well, so my new book is The Get Ready Blueprint, a 52-week guide to changing the way you think about money. And it does a couple of things. The very first part is it instills 8 habits. You know, some of the habits we've already been talking about is thinking about your goal first. Part of it is thinking. Think about how you think, having the right mindset. Relevancy is really important, is understanding your values. And does a financial service or product meet your values and your actual goals? And yearly review, and that's where the 52 weeks come in, is, you know, we have all these pieces of our financial lives scattered around. You know, we may have a 401k with an old employer. You know, we have an insurance policy that we bought 20 years ago. We have, you know, this and that, and we don't review it. We don't go back and say, okay, well, how does this piece fit into the puzzle? So each week it's a discrete action item, where it might be, you know, 1 week is reviewing the beneficiary. So it's reviewing the beneficiaries on your insurance policies, as well as your retirement plans, is most people don't go back and review the beneficiaries on their IRAs and 401ks. You know, they may not add a kid, they may have an ex-spouse, you know, all kinds of different things. So it's like walking people through that. Say, think about one thing, so it makes it easy for them to do, but it makes sure that they review all areas of their financial lives, and they can say, okay, this piece is missing, or I don't need this piece anymore. Because that's oftentimes the other thing, is we accumulate financial services and products, and sometimes we don't need them anymore, and we don't get rid of them. You know, we just clutter more financial services and products.
Yeah, I think that's so important to mention, and thank you for mentioning that, because it reminds me, so reviewing what you have had in the past, and does it still make sense for you today? I remember, and I'm sure this is the case with many individuals, I was probably about 10 or 12 years old. My parents had life insurance, and they, you know, the agent came over to the house and they sat us down, and the agent explained all about what it does and why you need it. And so now every year I pay this bill, and I've been doing it for a long time. And I questioned a few years back, I was like, why am I paying this? I don't even remember. I know life insurance is good, but I don't remember what it does. I don't remember what it's for. I was so young when they came over. the agent who came over to the house doesn't even work for the company anymore. So I had to ask my parents to get the contact of the agent who was in charge of the policy so that I could speak to him and actually understand, like, what is this? Why do I have it? What are the benefits? Who's on the account? And, you know, I ended up deciding to keep it, but you don't know sometimes when you're so young.
Mm-hmm.
And then as life goes on, things get busy, it doesn't come to mind to review these things. And life insurance, yeah, it still works for me, but I'm sure there's a lot of things like the old bank accounts and many things we can just let go of, but that are either collecting dust or sometimes just collecting fees automatically and you don't even know it.
Yeah. And on the life insurance is, and you can Google me and hear my views on life insurance for kids. But here's a really simple rule with life insurance. Is somebody financially dependent upon you? And would they need that money if something were to happen to you? If you have no kids and, you know, your spouse has enough money, your domestic partner has enough money, then you don't really need the life insurance. But the life insurance industry has done a great job of saying, well, you might need it someday, so you better buy it today. But again, you know, like, you know, you couldn't buy an auto insurance policy for a car you might buy someday. You might say, well, you know, I hope to have a sports car someday, so I better get that auto insurance policy today while I still can. You wouldn't even be able to buy it. But in the insurance industry, they're like, well, you know, someday you may have kids, so you better buy $1 million of life insurance just in case you need it down the road. And I think, you know, and that's where I'm trying to change that conversation and mindset for people to think about, okay, goals first, goals first, goals first. What do I need?
Yeah. And I love that. I love the work that you're doing. So I want to talk about being financially unprepared for the unexpected. And you speak about this. So what are some things that anyone listening can start to do, actionable tips that they can start today, tomorrow, to start to prepare for whatever life may have in store for all of us?
Well, is, you know, just to make sure you have some liquid assets put aside. I call it a rainy day fund, you know, because emergency sounds so bad, you know, but a rainy day fund, you know, it's like if your car breaks down, you know, it's like you take your car into the shop, pretty much everything you do now is $400, you know, $500, you know, something happens, $500. So, you know, you need that money aside, but tactically how you do it is you can automate your savings to make sure that you pay yourself first. So in paying yourself first is make sure you pay your mandatory expenses, your, you know, super discretionary expenses, you know, food, you know, if you know, you need to make sure you have food, clothing, you know, maybe clothing is important for your job, as you know, to think about, you know, we talk about entrepreneurs, there's a lot of entrepreneurs. Well, paying your internet bill is pretty important if you're an online entrepreneur. So that becomes a mandatory expense, you know. Then you automate your savings, you know, for your emergency fund. So if you want an emergency fund of, let's say, $1,000, a rainy day fund of $1,000, you know, that's $100 a month for 12 months. That gives you $1,200. So, you know, the math's there. You can prove it out. But, you know, then what you have left over is what you can spend from. But so often what we do is we pay our bills, we spend the money that we want to spend, maybe concert tickets, you know, whatever, going out to dinner. And then we go, okay, well, whatever's left, I'm going to put into my savings. And that's okay, but you're not going to have money always to put into your savings. So if you change your flow of where you put the money into the savings, it becomes a lot easier to meet your goals.
I love that. I think that's such a great tip. And it's very easy to implement. It's something that you could do tomorrow or start to do tomorrow. But I feel like it is something that we often don't really want to do because we're used to doing things one way. Once it's a habit, it's really difficult to break. But exactly like you said, you know, you may not have enough or anything in savings at the end of potentially multiple months in 1 year if you don't change the way that you're doing things now.
Exactly. And it does become a little more challenging. I know your audience has a lot of entrepreneurs. And as an entrepreneur, your money flow is not the same from month to month. You know, that makes it more challenging for entrepreneurs. But that's where, you know, you do want to prepare a cash flow statement so you can see which months you have more. And maybe, you know, if you know every June you have more because, you know, you get a sponsorship check, you know, then maybe that sponsorship check 50% of that goes into your rainy day fund until you reach your balance, and then the excess goes into something else. But you already have a plan for your money. But the key is, one is habits, which is why I go through that. But two is knowing all the pieces, because if you're not taking a look at everything in its whole, it's really hard when you're looking at a discrete piece. You're looking at your sponsorship check over here. You're looking at your expenses over there. But if you don't look at everything together, you don't see how everything fits together. So I think that's the most important thing that I'm trying to work on, is helping people organize and review.
So on that note, talking about retirement, entrepreneurs, I want to talk about those two things and how they can mesh together, because off air, we were talking about how, you know, when you are building something that you love and that you're passionate about, you, funny, because you want to retire, but you don't want to retire. At least that's the way that I see it, because I love it. I don't ever want to stop doing it, even if I hit an age where traditionally you would think that you're going to stop and just relax full time. But at the same time, you also have the opposite, where you love what you're doing so much, you want to continue it, but it, you don't want it to be something that completely takes you over and takes over your life. So what does that balance look like in your opinion? When you are an entrepreneur, you are passionate about what you do every single day and who you help, what does retirement look like? And how can you start saving for that? And potentially that could maybe come a little bit earlier as well down the line.
Yeah, that's my favorite question. That's something I really get into in the book, is thinking about retirement differently. I mean, you'll notice I come back to that theme is change the way you think about money, but it's about financial independence. That's what people are really striving for. It's not retirement. I mean, I can't name one person who stopped working exactly at age 65. They 100% stopped working exactly at age 65. It doesn't happen. Nobody does that. Is, you know, people either stop working early, they work a little bit longer, maybe they work part-time, you know, when they turn 60, you know, it's all over the board. So it's really, as you point out, it's about like, what is your goal? What does your life look like? You know, there's a whole financial independence retire early, which is okay, but that kind of cuts a lot of things out and it makes life less fun. So, you know, it's kind of partially that balance of like, okay, well, what kind of lifestyle do you want to have today? You don't want to sacrifice too much in your current lifestyle, because you don't really know what's going to happen in the future. But then you start thinking about, okay, what's going to make me financially independent to allow me to continue to do things? Because I have switched over from being a fee-based insurance consultant to being an entrepreneur and doing, you know, the things that I love. And like you, it's like, I think I can do this indefinitely. And I want to do it indefinitely because I'm having fun talking about financial literacy. So, you know, it's making that shift and thinking about like, okay, well, what passive investments can I have that help me supplement my income? Is like, okay, well, if I only do, you know, podcasting, and so podcasting is going to bring in, let's say $2,000 a month, you know, whatever that number is, you know, do I have enough other assets, or what amount will I need, you know, to provide an income stream that will allow me to survive on just $2,000 a month for my podcasting? So it's, you know, thinking about it's personal finance is personal, but you know, what's going to allow you to be financially independent to say, okay, well, I can leave my employer and I can start my entrepreneurship because I feel like I have enough money, or I know what I need to pay my expenses and to meet my goals. So that's where I look at it.
Yeah, I love that outlook on it. And in you saying about the investment aspect of things, I'm curious, in your opinion, because this looks completely different for everybody, what are some good investments to get started in if you are an entrepreneur, you're building something that you enjoy, you want to have that retirement, but you don't ever want to retire? I don't know if there's a good word for that, but yeah. You know what I mean. So what would you say are some good investments that you could get started with if you're in this situation?
Well, definitely not NFTs. You do not want to invest in the Bored API Club. Sorry, I couldn't resist that one. Is that it does become a little bit personal, but thinking about who you are is, you know, to take a risk tolerance questionnaire, see if you're a person who is willing to take risk. I think sometimes, you know, we start thinking about that investment and it's a riskier investment than who we are personally. Some of us are comfortable with more volatility, which means your stocks are going up and down more frequently. Your investments vary. And some people are going to want slow and steady, and they're willing to give up some of that future return for more safety and less volatility. So that's the first thing, is to think about who you are and what you're comfortable with, and then find the assets and investments that meet that goal. Is, you know, I recommend that everybody goes out and gets The Intelligent Investor by Benjamin Graham. Make sure you get the updated version by Jason Zweig, because the first one was written 100 years ago, so it's a little bit hard to read. But Benjamin Graham was the mentor to Warren Buffett, who's, I think we can all agree, has been somewhat successful with his investing portfolio. But the lessons are timeless. They're about diversification. They're about volatility. So like how Benjamin Graham puts it with the market is, you know, imagine your business partner is Mr. Market. You know, one day he comes to work and, you know, there's a rain puddle and he gets splashed by the rain puddle. And so his clothes are soaking wet and his, you know, his coffee, he didn't get his daily latte. And he comes up to the office and he's in a really bad mood. So the market goes down. And the next day, you know, things are looking good. You know, he actually, you know, has a great morning and the market goes up. And that's the volatility. And you don't know what causes that volatility. So you have to be comfortable with the volatility and then find the investments that are going to get you there. The other thing that I would tell people is to be very, very diligent in the D and get ready is details and expenses. Look at what you're paying. Is, you know, if you may have the same mutual fund or very identical mutual funds or ETFs, and one may have a 1% expense charge, one may have a 0.25% expense charge, and it's pretty much identical investment. So, you know, if you can save that 0.75% or 1% in expenses, your return is going to go up by 1%. So that's my investing advice.
Love that. That's very practical, figuring out what your risk tolerance is and what you can take and what maybe you want to stay away from. So is there anything that you would like to touch on that we have not touched on in this conversation?
Yeah, I think the big thing for me is for people to be curious and to ask questions, but to understand that you can take control of your money, that you can be empowered with your money if you take the time to think about your habits, to think about yourself, and to invest a little bit of time. And that's why I created, you know, the 52-week program, so you can do a little bit each week. You know, rather than say, okay, well, once a year I have to do taxes and that's when I'm going to think about money. And it's like so overwhelming that nobody really does it. Or, you know, my insurance renewal came up and gosh, I don't have time to shop for a new auto insurance policy. Is, you know, so to take the time, but to put yourself first and always come back to like who you are. It's your money, take the control and you can do it. That's what I would leave people with, is to empower yourself. Take control. Don't let anybody else tell you what to do.
It's your money. So you should know where it's going and what is best to do with it to make it grow, hopefully. So where can people find you and your book online?
Well, you can pick up my book at Amazon or bookshop.org. And I always give a shout out to bookshop.org because a portion of the proceeds go back to support independent bookstores. So if you love independent bookstores, bookshop.org is an awesome place to find my book and pretty much any book you could find on the Amazon, as well as you can find me on my website, tonystewart.com.
You've just listened to the Work, Wealth, and Travel podcast. If anything from this episode resonated with you, I would appreciate if you share this podcast on your socials. And of course, be sure to tag me. And don't forget to leave a review on your favorite podcast platform. Thank you for joining me on this global citizen journey, and I'll see you in the next episode.